Dean-O-Matic.
Amen.
First of all, let me thank God for another day clean. And Montgomery County for letting me participate in a convention this year. You know, this is a real good subject. You know, I kind of like woke up this morning, you know, walked outside my balcony. I was looking at the water. You know what I mean? I was kind of like grieving there, kind of like getting in touch with the Creator. You know what I mean? Because I know it's only through the grace of God that I've been here long enough to be able to repair some relationships, family relationships, that I destroyed when I first got here. Mm. You know what I mean? So I'm in touch with that. You know, and as I was going into prayer, man, I got a sense of gratitude and became emotionally balanced and stuff like that. You know, and I got ready to kind of like start my day. You know, because I was the guy, man, I'd done everything I could possibly do to destroy all my relationships. You know, intimate family relationships. You know, relationships with my mother. My mother had me, she was 14 years old, man. We grew up in West Baltimore. You know, I couldn't understand why she couldn't buy the Nikes and stuff like that. You know, the self-centeredness, man, I always kind of like had me, you know, putting high expectations on her. You know, I was real disrespectful. You know, the bushes was fashionable then, man. So I always get the bald heads and shit. You know, the kids used to squeeze my head and say, Dean of Bean, Dean of Bean. You know, so I had a lot of resentment for my mother, right? You know, in fact, man, at an early age, there's a whole lot of self-hate there. You know, I remember going to school, man, you know, I had the dashiki on, you know what I mean, and the pantry pride shoes, right? You know, the kids would always kind of make fun of me. You know, I always thought it was my mother's fault. But she was doing the best she could do to kind of like pay the light bills and stuff like that. You know. I remember standing my grandmother, man, up on Emerson Avenue. You know, I could never really see the self-centeredness into it. You dig? You know, I'm kind of talking about the obsession and compulsion, man, when I'm like caught up, right? And you really don't care about your family when you're caught up in obsession and compulsion. When you walk outside your grandmother's house with a bag of wax and a razor and a smoking stem, right? And you're breaking people off. You really don't care about your family when you're caught up in obsession and compulsion. Completely self-centered. You dig? When you walk outside the house, man, and you rob the first person, you got raw dope, morphine, all that stuff. Right? I couldn't see that before I got here. You know? See, at an early age, man, you know, my mother had me, she was young, right? My father and mother, they really split up, right? I never knew my father. You know, I had good aunts and stuff like that, man. I remember at an early age, man, like about 19 years old, I was kind of like caught up. I remember my aunt asked me because she knew, I guess she kind of like a sense of death. It was a Sunday, I was laying in the bed, man, I was balled up, my stomach was growling, my bones was aching, all that shit. Only thing I could think about was going outside and robbing somebody to get the next one. I remember my aunt was pleading with me, Dean, will you please move out Montgomery County with me? I don't think so, they ain't got no dope out there. Just like caught up. You know, the disease had me, man, being all right with being dead. You know, I tried to do a geographical thing, change, right? And eventually I moved to Southern Prince George's County, right? And I got married, you know, and another family I destroyed in active addiction. You know, it was all good in the beginning. I would come home, go to work, and but once I found out where the dope was, the day after Christmas, with the trash bag, with the toys, getting off the J-12. I'm in a whole new city. Getting off the J-12. Dropping the bag right there. How much can y'all give me for that? You dig? I remember early on in recovery, right? Remember, I asked my wife to hang out and shit, right, the first week or so. She would come pick me up from the halfway house. You know? And what I quickly found out, man, was I began to engage in a relationship, right? There was too much emotional harm, right, to kind of, like, repair anything. You know, you called her too many names. You done cussed out too much. You know what I mean? She still remember when you dragged her down the alley, man, with a pocketbook. You know, and the first time, man, something happened, man, all the memories came back. I remember at the end of the road, man, when I got locked up, you know, ain't nobody come visit me. but my 77-year-old grandmother. My aunts came out there. You know, it was an emotional bottom, man, because I was looking from the window, right? And I seen my 77-year-old grandmother, man, struggling getting across the yard. You know, I remember my aunt talking about, God damn, we don't get yourself together. We got to bring your grandmother across the yard in the snow to visit the dumbass. You know, that was like real emotional for me to see that shit. And I remember, man, coming out the cell, man, you did. And a guy told me to throw somebody over the tier. So when he popped the cells, I threw the dude over the tier. And when the dude fell over, I seen him hit the concrete, right? It was the first time I felt shame, guilt, remorse, and stuff like that. And I said my first sincere, honest prayer, like, God, can you please help me be a different person? They released me. You know what I mean? And they released me, mate. All the promises I made, you know, when they released me, I'm going to come home, I'm going to see them, I'm going to spend some time with the family and all that stuff. You know what I mean? But with that reservation, all that shit went out the window. You know what I mean? With that reservation, I had to go to all the Arthur Capers and show them how good I look. You look good, face. Here, take this package. And they gave me the package, right? You know what I mean? I used all the drugs, right? You know, at the end of the road, man, you know, I was walking down Southern Avenue, right? The homeless people was going home and shit. I had nowhere to go. You know what I mean? You know, because at the end of my night, just became, goddamn, how the hell did you get in? You know, I went to the abandoned mini map, sleeping next to the needles and the stems and all that shit, right? I'm looking at it like, this shit is unbelievable. I walked to Capitol Heights Metro Station, man, it was in the dead winter time. I opened the window up, man, because my feet were stinking that bad. I remember walking into that detox unit, man. You did. There's a whole bunch of nice looking women in there, man, you know, similar to the way y'all be looking. Hair done up, nails done. You know, and the disease was like, Dan, y'all know goddamn where you're going to take your shoes off in front of all them women. You know, because for a long time it was like acceptance that disease of addiction, but there was no surrender, no humility, no willingness, none of that shit, right? And what happened was, right, I stayed stuck in front of Bell's Liquor Store, greasy as the pork chop, right, with a rag on like this. The next stop probably been a newspaper under my arm, right? So I finally reached that point of humility, right? So I walked into the detox unit, right? The lady was like, young man, sit down. So I sit down. She asked me questions and stuff like that. Right? So she said, you got to take your shoes off. I'm like, oh, my God. You can't be serious. So I took my first lace off, right? She said, God damn, baby. I'm like, God. We're going to get you some help. Don't worry about it. Look. You're going to get your ass some long-term treatment. But that was the humiliation I needed. Right. See, at that point, man, the white flag was up. I surrendered. Whatever I want me to do, I'm going to do. Right. You know what I mean? They shipped me all the way up Central Maryland, right? In between Howard County, PG County, and Anne Arundel County and Treatment Center. It's a new experience for me. We started going to outside meetings and stuff like that. My first outside meeting was like Savage Survivors. You know, and that was like a biker meeting. You know, they had the ponytails and shit. You know, I grew up Emerson Avenue, Pimlico Road. I got Murphy O's, shit like that. You know what I'm talking about? Right? So I'm looking at this shit, I'm fucked up. And me, you know, what the fuck they got me all the way out here for? God damn. Wasn't nobody hugging me, none of that. You know what I mean? So automatically, I went straight into resentment mode. So they probably have me because I walked in the meeting like this. I had the conversation sweatshirt on, it was real tight. You know that. You remember me, don't you? I had the pants on that was real tight and shit. What the fuck is this shit? So they were sharing and shit, raising their hand, I'm looking around. I said, man, I can't have done it. Look, maybe they'll feel this one. I'm dead, I'm out of it. I don't like none of you motherfuckers in here. So the meeting proceeded to go on, right? At the end of the meeting, man, a guy named Jim, he asked me if he'd like to pass out the key tags. And look, and what I'm saying is, what I'm trying to convey to y'all, right, before I can start repairing my intimate relationships with my family, intimate family, right, y'all became my family first. I had to go through y'all, man, to get to my family. And when I started passing out the key tags, man, I kind of like started feeling a part of my cause anonymous, right? They didn't judge my desire to stay clean. So every Sunday I'd be at this meeting, you know, anybody got 30 days, 90 days? And I was embracing people. I was hugging people. I got 90 days clean. You dig? I'm a guy that got low self-esteem. I can grit on you, right? I can do that real good. But it's hard for me, man, to kind of like walk up and pick my key tag. You know, there's a difference between having heart and courage. Okay. I had heart my whole life. That was the dumbest shit I've ever had was heart. Oh, yeah, you got a lot of heart. It'd burn you in a minute. But it took courage, man, to kind of like walk up there and get my 90 key tag. It was a big meeting, man. It's called the Star Group. Right? So I'm walking to get my key tag, right? And all you heard is people going, keep coming back. Keep coming, you know, I was filled up by that. So I came up to get my key tag, right? They was out of key tags. Man, I messed up all this courage to walk up here. Man, who the GSR? He must not be taking his inventory right or something. Right? But after the meeting, I walked across to the recovery house, right? It was an old guy named Bob M. He had about 16 years. And he walked and he followed me all the way to the recovery house on Main Street. He gave me this big hug. A biker guy. Gave me this big hug like, Dean, I love you. Please keep coming back. And he gave me his personal 90-day key tag. Wow. And that was a spiritual experience for me, man. You know what I mean? I started to understand, man, diversity is the backbone of this program. You don't know who God's going to work through, so you need to be open to as many people as you possibly can be. Because the same person that thought DOC was a vacation resort may not stay clean, dude. So he became like a father figure to me. I would go to his meeting every Sunday, every Wednesday, right? And he would call me from all the way to the back, have me sit up front and kiss me on the cheek and shit like that, right? You know, white guy, biker guy. I'm like, damn, this is home. Because, Mel, you remember, man, my people dropped off a little-ass Raven jacket. They came to right here in my arm. It was like this. They said, don't call us, we'll call you. And here go a Thanksgiving plate. I'm like, God damn. I became open to relationships, man. The humility began to really set in. You did. The open-mindedness began to set in, right? Met my Italian mom over there, Miss Nettie, right? I'm going to try to watch the language, Ma. Sometimes I just get a little enthused, right? You know, and Miss Nettie became like a mother figure to me. You know, I began to call her Ma, right? And we began to go to Giants and Weiss and stuff like that. We would talk, and, you know, and she would ask me to say grace and shit like that, right? You know, I was like, damn, how saying the grace and praying will keep me clean? You know, I just don't understand that, right? Because I was very impulsive. You know, the first thing I thought I would do, you know, so I began to, like, start my prayer life and stuff like that, right? You know, and I needed a God. You know, it was good to have a relationship with y'all, right? But I needed a direct connection to the Creator. I had my son here, man, and when my son was born, he was born with this growth coming out of the skull. Now, you know, my imaginability, man, was evident from the outside, right? But it was on a whole nother level because my imaginability was from within. Some days, man, I'd be crying, man. You know, because the fear began to set in, right? Some days I'd be crying, right? Some days I'd be happy, sad, right? This is my first son, man, my only son, man, the love of my life. Right? We'd go to the doctor. They couldn't tell me what I wanted to hear, right? And I kind of like would be caught up. Then when we had the biopsy, you know, they had the surgery and stuff like that, right? It came out fine. But once I got like related to the Creator, right, a lot of fears began to subside. You know, this was a tough year. I mean, you're talking about family members, right? I lost 3 family members, man, in a month. I had a first cousin died in a motorcycle accident. I had another first cousin die, man. She went to the hospital. She had surgery because she had water in her lungs, and somehow she caught pneumonia in there. She didn't make it out. We thought she was going to make it out. You know what I mean? An uncle died from diabetic stroke. You know what I mean? And thank God, man, from the experience earlier, right? Because through that experience with my son, I started to learn how to trust God. You dig? And what happened was I started finding peace in it, right? You dig? Because relationship with my God and my understanding allowed me to accept the hand that I was dealt. In fact, I got some gratitude, man, because they was kind of like able to show up, you know what I mean, before they transitioned, right? And see my family, embrace my family, and stuff like that, right? You dig? And it was like a hell of a feeling. The comfortability, man, I got my skin as a result of the steps in the Cause Anonymous. Even like dealing with my son, man. You know what I mean? I've been committed to my son, man, since I've been here. You know what I mean? That was one commitment, man, that I stood by. You know? We was going over some homework, right? 4.5. And he was struggling with saying the S's, right? And he kept saying X, 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 right? And I would get frustrated. You know what I mean? I would take a break, get frustrated, you know, and come back, I'll hug him and embrace him, and we'll start over, and we keep going over and stuff like that, right? You know, and my girlfriend said, well, that shit ain't funny. You need to be more stern on him. And part of the disease, like, you need to shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? That's what the defective side wanted to say, man, because this is my son, right? See, I understand the effects of emotional harm. When I was coming up, man, my mother told me, you stupid, you retarded, you can't get that right, you can't do this right, this, that. You understand what I'm saying, man? I've been in a whole lot of different prisons. I've been in Hagerstown, Jessup, Baltimore County, Baltimore City, Upper Marlboro, 7 locks, right? But the worst prison I've been locked in was in my own mind. You know, and that was like the emotional harm, man, that kind of like happened to me as a result of that, right? And when she said it, man, I kind of like prayed for humility, right? And let her know humility, right? And kept embracing my son. You did? You know, even like engaging with her son. It's new. You know? I mean, I first used to come over there, man, I'd speak to the little kid, like 16 years old, right? He'd sit on the couch like this. Fuck is he? Yeah, didn't see me speak to him. And I kept praying for patience. I kept coming to listen to learn and sharing about it. You know what I mean? And I remember during the winter storm, right, I was shoveling the snow. And he took a long time to come downstairs, right? So you know the impatience and the anger was coming up. It was like right here. You need to take this off that to get down here with a shovel and help me out. But I get to pray for patience and humility. You dig? When I begin to understand, right, that he never had no father figure. He's doing the best that he could do with what he got. You know, when he came down there, I hugged him, I embraced him. And his mother got him and made him do the backyard, right? And I got my shovel, I went back there with him. You know what I mean? In fact, man, his natural father right here in a rehab, what's called rehabilitation center shit, his lungs and kidneys, all his organs failing. I don't know the dude. You understand what I'm saying? But I encouraged the boy to go see his father. You know what I mean? Because the fear was kicking in and resentment, all that shit was kicking in, right? So I kept encouraging him to go see his father, right? Not because, man, I know his father and none of that shit, right? Because I'm a dad, I can empathize with it. If I was in that position, I would want my son to come see me. In fact, man, I drove him down there to go see him down there, put him in a chicken wing to put him down there to see his father. But when he came out crying, he cleansed, he felt better, man. And he gave me this hug and said, I love you, Mr. Dean. Do you not understand, man? I'm not trying to be his dad, beat on my chest and change all the rules, none of that, right? I'm just trying to be there for support. I understand my role. You dig? In fact, man, he invited me, man, to his banquet at Poly Tech. You know, he got some type of, well, I forget what it is now, right? But I just felt honored. You know what I mean? Whereas though I get to the point, man, to where as though I could participate in that, man. You know, I've done a whole lot of damage, man, with my son mother. In fact, right at one point in time, man, she started struggling. You know, so I filed for custody of my son. And when I was riding up a Marlboro on a court date, man, it's amazing, man, how the disease is set in and say, man, you can get custody of this, and let's turn the car around. You know? It's a fact that I feel, but my feelings ain't facts. You know what I mean? So I kept challenging. I kept going into prayer, man. I went in the courtroom. You know what I mean? And she's sitting right there, and she's throwing everything at me but your kitchen sink. You done this in 83, and you done this in 2002, and you done this, and you, yeah, I done it. Thank God I was at the point to where I finally forgive myself for what I done, right? And I'm like, how I'm living it right now in the present. And the judge asked me, I want to say anything, right? You know, and I said my piece, right? Then he asked me, Dean, do you want full custody? I said, what do you want to do? And I said, man, just give me joint physical custody. You see how the resentment, right? I kind of like could have took my son from his mother, right, and made you pay child support now. Because you're struggling. You know what I mean? She kind of started getting on her feet a little bit, right? But it ain't what's best for Dean. This was best for the group. So understand, man, how much my son loves his mother. He loves his little brothers. He loves his little sisters, man. He got a connection with them. It's like a connection with me. Right? So I just felt like, you know, for joint custody, right, and shared physical custody. You know? Then the following week, he had this little church event. You know, he got into the church, like, singing and, you know, playing the little congos. And me and Donna went up there. You know, and my son's mother was in there, you know, and she was hot. So I walked up to her, man, which I taught me how to do, man. I walked up to her and gave her a hug and kept it moving. We may not be living together, but we still a family, whether you like it or not. The unity still got to set in, right? Because it's for the well-being of my son. You know what I mean? I don't talk bad about my son in front of you. Talk bad about my son's mother in front of him. None of that shit. Sometimes I want to. When she sent him over there with some orange shirts and blue jackets and shit. You know what I mean? Looking off, hair ain't brushed. You know what I mean? I be wanting to say, but I catch myself, man. Because I don't want to scar him emotionally. You did? In fact, I engaged with all the kids, man. Even Nicole, man, she had a baby when she was 15 years old, man. You know, her mother ain't got no money, so she threw him away. Her new boyfriend ain't got no money, so he wasn't doing shit. Right? So she moved the baby father. She was calling me. Even though me and the mother ain't still together, right, you dig? But I was still there for her. Because my spirit was telling me, you got it, serve. When she needed Pampers, I got the fucking Pampers. When she needed money for the baby, I served, right? For 2 years straight, right? And her mother never knew nothing about it. Goodwill. You know what I mean? And the payoff came from within, man. Truly, man, the cosmos has blessed me through the God of my understanding. Man, it's unbelievable how phenomenal my life is, man. My life is phenomenal. You dig? I was riding down Brooklyn with my family. Me and my girl, my stepson, and my son coming from a seafood joint called Mo. Damn, I ain't trying to endorse it. My bad. Just coming from a seafood joint, right? And I was coming through Brooklyn before I got to Cherry Hill, right? I seen this little white guy. He was straggling and begging for change and stuff like that. He was struggling. You know what I mean? And I seen me and him. You know, and as he's asked for change, man, they was out there dogging him, man, get away from here. And we was at the Royal Farms, in fact, right? You know, and I got the car, man, you know. And something in my spirit was like, Dean, break him off. So I went in my pocket, right? I just broke him off what I had in my pocket, right? And he thanked me, right? And he began to share his story with me. I'm homeless. I'm trying to get into treatment, man. You know what I mean? Woo, woo, woo. I said, man, you're the same person, man. I broke my head and enemy right there on the spot, man, because my spirit told me to do it, right? He said, man, you my hope. I called Tombo, man, how you come in this process and this program a mess, right? And I caused Namas, man, to give you a message. If it could work for me, it could work for you. You know what I mean? My grandmother, man, you dig? Sometimes I get filled with so many commitments and not cause anonymous, man, at work, you know what I mean, being here, there. Sometimes I can't get to my family like I want them to. You dig? A lot of times I got to make time to get to my grandmother. You know, her hearing is ailing, her vision is, you dig? And I said, the opportunity, man, to walk up there, man, she waiting for me right in the door. You know, I give her this big hug and kiss, man. And let her know how much I love her and show her. And she appreciate that, man. You know, it's like since I've been here, man, I became like the rock of the family. I don't know how it happened. I just kept coming to meetings and working steps and working with my sponsor and learning the tradition and stuff like that. I became the rock of my family. You know what I mean? I had a cousin that died from complications of the virus. My aunt called me from work, man. I shot straight over there. As he was in the bed, man, he's only about 67 pounds, something like that. And I looked at him, I said, I apologize for the emotional harm I done to you. Because he wasn't on my list. But it hit my spirit. He's like, that's all right, Dean, you're making up for it right now. It's amazing, man, how God will create the stage for you to repair on what you fucked up your whole life. It's amazing, man. As long as you stay in the process, right, and keep God in your pocket, right, he'll set the stage, right, but just spread intact. You dig? I could buy the flat screens I want to. I could put the leather couches in. I done all that shit. But you can't buy peace in your house. You dig? And most of the time, in my household, man, you know, I mean, it's real peaceful, man. The kids be playing. We be joking. We be laughing, all that shit. I'm probably talking about the atmosphere of recovery we got at home. That's right. You can practice that shit in here. You need to do that shit at home, too. Right. You know what I mean? That's what it's been for me, man. You know what I mean? I ain't come here for all that. You know what I mean? But I'm real grateful for the program, man. You know, it's not for the materialistic things and stuff like that and a good job and career and stuff like that, right? For what y'all done for me in my insides, man. My insides, man, is the seat of my expectations. Thanks for allowing me to share.
At this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker. Susie H. from Montgomery County, right?
I'm Susie, I'm an addict. I am standing up. you know, I was, I bought a book, a 6th edition book. And for me to buy another edition, I used to work on literature. Is a big growth thing for me to be able to buy literature that I didn't help write. You know, not that I helped write all literature, but you know, I did some service, and okay, how about that? Okay, and anyway, so I looked up in the back of the 6th edition family, and you know, it had all these different places in family in the front part of the book, but it was all about how we hurt our family, you know. And I try to look it up in the 5th edition, and it doesn't say anything about family. So I started thinking, well, what is it about, you know, recovery, a family affair, that I need to talk about today? And what do I need to remember about families and recovery? And the first thing I have to remember is I'm the addict right now. You know, when I was growing up, my dad was a Southern Baptist preacher, so I have issues. And, you know, he used to answer the phone, "Jesus loves you." And that was very embarrassing for, you know, a 10 or 11-year-old. And so I still work on stuff like that. But that's all right. And let's see, I was using, and then I used a lot, and I had a lot of bad feelings, and then I got clean. And right before I got clean, I had a baby, a little girl named Nikki. And she started to change my life. Because the one thing that made a difference in my life was seeing how my behavior affected other people. And the fact that I was the most precious thing in my world. You know, she was second to everything because everything I was about was getting high, and getting laid. And that was it. And, you know, and I used to, really ignore her. And then I got clean. Well, I tried to get clean for about 3 years. I finally got it. I found out if you don't use, you don't relapse. Wow. Surprised me. I thought it was because you didn't work a step or have a sponsor or go to enough meetings or all this other stuff. But it's because you use. Because I used. And anyway, so I stopped using and I started getting clean. I started working a program. I had a really mean sponsor. But I needed a mean sponsor because I was pretty mean. And they used to call me the bitch with a book. And because I really liked the rules, you know. And when I found the traditions, I thought, you know, I'm in heaven. I found something I can control people with. I did not understand that at the time. First, I was just like, oh, my, I got something to stand for, you know. Because I always believed if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And so I started going to meetings and doing service work and doing all that stuff. And you know what I was doing? I was doing exactly the same thing to my daughter that I did when I was using. My program came first. Well, it had to come first so I could be there for her. And my sponsor said, why don't you stay home on Tuesdays? And I said, okay, I can do that. I can stay home on Tuesdays. So I would stay home on Tuesday nights, and my daughter would go to the neighbors and play. And I'd say to my sponsor, well, I'm staying home, and she just goes and plays. And she goes, yeah, but she knows you're there. And that's the thing that was the biggest thing for me with my daughter is I had to make her feel important because I couldn't get clean until I started feeling important to myself. And so whatever I'm going to give myself, I have to be careful, you know, how I'm spreading that around. And when I had enough to give around, I did a convention and all kind of crazy stuff. And I was in my daughter's room one day. I can't remember if it happened this way or not. Anyway, I suddenly found out she was using. She was like, I guess she was like 12 or 13 years old, and I started using when I was about that age. And then she started running away from home, and I started having all kind of problems with her, which drove me nuts because she grew up in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, she was like, I don't know, she was born in 79. Anyway, so she was like 5 by the time I got clean. And I didn't know what to do because everybody was telling me that there was a problem. You know, she had started acting out before that. And when I realized there was a problem because she started running away from home, every time she'd come home, I'd put her in rehab. That's all I knew to do. That's what I did. Eventually, that's what helped me stay clean. So that's what I did with her. And so I put her in rehab. Actually, it happened 3 times. And today she's got 15 years of recovery today, which is really cool. And the thing I think that makes it the biggest difference is I don't forget that I'm an addict too. You know, when I look through the book and who is an addict is in the first part, there's a line in here that says higher mental and emotional functions such as conscious and the ability to love were sharply affected by our use of drugs. Well, I couldn't show anybody how I loved them. You know, I wouldn't even say the word. I would say the L word. And I probably until I had like some clean time was I able to say the word love. And, you know, I had to watch people. And how I had to learn the whole process of having the ability to love because I thought loving me meant you were going to give me something. You know, if you, and I have a sister that's like that. And, you know, if you love me, you're going to give me what's in your freezer, you know, or in your pocket or whatever pocket it is. You know, I'll take anything. And, you know, so I thought that that's what it was about. And then I got clean and, you know, like we were talking about before, I started getting a family in here. And people started treating me with respect, even though I was not very respectful to them. But I had the tradition, so they would, like, come to me and ask questions because I felt real important. And, you know, I was a book quote, and, you know, I already told you what I was. And so I think that it's very important what we give each other. And I know that I have a lot of trouble sometimes giving what I want to get. And I think that when I don't necessarily know that I want love from people, because it's a responsibility when you love somebody. Like if somebody asks me to sponsor them, you know, that's a responsibility that I have and they have. It's a two-way street. So the people in my life, it's a two-way street. So that's, the recovery is all about giving and you get. Just as a result, and it's not always you get where you get from where you give to, you know. And, you know, I am amazed at how much love I have in my life today, you know, and I have three grandkids, granddaughters. They are the best. And, you know, I take them to meetings. Well, here's what I did when I was going to meetings with Nikki. I had a meeting bag, and I had a meeting bag for her when she was little, and it was toys that she could only play with at meetings. And I kept it in the car, so it wasn't a big hassle for me, because Lord knows I wouldn't do anything for her that was a hassle for me. And so it was very special stuff she had in there. And when she got older, I got her one of those little tiny TVs, you know, so she could watch, you know, whatever it was that she was watching. I hope it was all right. She got clean, but anyway, when I had that meeting bag, that helped a lot. And so I try to tell people to have kids, you know, when you bring your kids into meetings, try to bring something for them to do, you know, because it's really, really boring. I had this one friend who used to bring his daughter in, and he made her sit in the chair and be quiet. And she was like six. That's like, I can't do that. And I'm a lot older than six. And I can't sit still, and I barely can be quiet. And, you know, but eventually I started putting stuff in my purse to give to her at meetings. And then it was, you know, it was nicer meetings when I felt for her, you know, being constrained like that. And when my daughter got older and she started using, well, I told you I got her, kept putting her in rehab, and I participated in the family stuff, although I thought I was too good for the family stuff because I was in recovery. I could have taught them, you know, what they were trying to teach me. But at that point, I was concentrating on somebody else that was an addict. And I had to learn a different thing. Isn't it crazy? Every time you learn something around here, you don't need to use it anymore. You have to learn something else. And, you know, it's just one thing after another, and we just grow and grow and grow. And so I grew big time. And I don't ever get taller, though. But, you know, my daughter was raised in N.A., and the people in N.A., I asked for help in the meetings with her. People used to say, sit down, Nikki. Or people used to say, you're being too loud, Nikki. Or people used to say, go in the hall and play, Nikki. And I didn't get mad because I needed help because I was a single mom, and Nikki was a handful. And when people tried to help me, I listened to what they were talking about. And Nikki listened, too, because she would have listened to somebody she didn't know. She hears me nagging at her all the time. So, you know, our kids can sometimes benefit from us having people in recovery in our lives if we allow that to happen. And so when, I say a lot. When, when I say a lot, that means I'm trying to organize my thoughts and my brain is like weird. And so anyway, I just thought that the meeting bag was a really important tool for me. And when she got older, the other thing that was a real important tool for me, when she started using, and I had so much trouble letting go, because she knew better. She knew what an addict was. She knew where meetings were. She knew all my friends. I wanted her to work my program. I wanted her to be me, because I was getting along with me. And I was doing pretty good. You know, I liked me now. And so she didn't. She went to a different place, but she still got a lot of clean time. And I'm glad, because she needed her own program. And I had to learn to let somebody else do what they needed to do that was best for them. And it wasn't exactly what I thought they needed to do. I mean, I tried to get her a sponsor. You know, I was like, oh, here, this person's nice and I'm not, so, you know, she needs somebody nice in her life and these kind of meetings she needs and young people go here. And, you know, I just had to totally let go of all that. And it's so much against a mother's nature to let go of anything that your child is doing, because it hurts. And, I mean, for the same amount of happiness that our kids give us, they can wrench our hearts that much too. And by letting it go, see, I'm on an analogy now. I'm thinking about a toolbox and a wrench and a heart. And, you know, if I use the right tools, I could just tweak that heart and get it pumping in the right way. But it doesn't work that way. That belongs to her. I got to keep my tools out of her heart. And, ha-ha, I did it. And so anyway, she's clean now. She's married to a guy that has a lot of clean time. He's probably got 17 or 18 years. And they have 3 kids. And guess what I have at my house a lot? Grandkids. And guess what I still need to do? Go to meetings. So I have to take my grandkids to meetings with me sometimes, or else I don't get to meetings. And I'm an addict, and I don't go to meetings because I have service position. I go to meetings because I'm an addict, and I need to recover from the disease of addiction. So I have a meeting bag again. Except I let the grandkids pick out what goes in the bag, because I want to whet their appetite. I try not to take more than one at a time to a meeting, because they're just too cute and everybody wants to see them. And they are. Really. I'll show pictures after the meeting. And, you know, I really love being a grandma. I love having a family. I share a house with my 83-year-old mother. She lives upstairs. I have my own apartment downstairs, which is great. When they first asked me about sharing at this meeting, is recovery a family affair, there was this guy, one of my buddies, you know, not really dating, but you know what I'm talking about, that was my buddy for like 20 years. And my sister got buddies with him. So that's what I thought I was going to talk about today, you know, family affair. That's recovery. But, you know, that kind of stuff does happen in recovery. And, you know, we have to let go of stuff. And just because, you know, just because somebody's not an addict doesn't mean they're not an asshole. You know, and we gotta remember that I'm the one that I can control, and you know, I don't have to talk to my sister or the guy. And you know, he's got a program. He wrote me a really nice letter, put it on my car. But you know what? You know, when I was working on that forgiving step and making amends in my life, I realized that just because I want to make amends to somebody doesn't mean that they're going to take them. And, you know, sometimes things just hurt, and I don't have to do the spiritual thing all the time, because I am a human being and I have feelings. So sometimes I have to go through the feelings so I don't act them out in other ways later on. And so, anyway, I guess, is it time for me to shut up? Probably. No. And let me tell you some more about the guy. But anyway, I try not to talk about that guy. but I end up doing it sometimes. Because, you know, it's like for a long time, I always thought I was a victim of everything, and then all of a sudden I really was, and it's like, oh my God, I went and told everybody what happened, you know? No anonymity. I mean, he's the one that, you know, blew it, not me. And so that was his problem. And I just, you know, it really hurt me a lot, and I had to go through feelings. And the other thing I had to realize is, you know, I don't participate in a lot of behavior that involves those kind of issues today. I'm pure again, and for a long time. And I think it's a good thing. One time I was telling somebody earlier today, I used to tell my sponsor, I got to get up with some guy. I just got to, you know. And she said, well, you better go to the doctor. Something must be wrong with you. So, you know, I think about that sometimes when I think about things I just got to do. Today, it's shopping. You know, all my credit cards are in the ClearPoint Credit Agency now because they make all my payments for me. I don't, because I bought couches and Lazy Boys and stuff. I didn't just buy clothes. Well, I don't buy that many clothes, but I buy them on sale. But anyway, I still have trouble with that. And my addiction shows up in a lot of areas of my life. And when I'm being a parent, my self-centeredness is the one place I really need to watch out. Because sometimes it's not all about me and how I feel and how you're affecting my life. Because I really had trouble when I was doing all that service work and I was first getting clean. I had a lot of trouble prioritizing with my daughter. I ignored her a lot. And I would drag her to every kind of meeting there was, you know, any kind of convention meeting, you know, NA meeting, not prayer meeting, I never went there, but, you know, any kind of meeting that I went to, she was with me most of the time because my mom would never help me. But she does now. And so I just... You know, I just thought she just knew, you know. But the disease doesn't like, introduce itself at a certain age or whatever, you know. It just creeps in there. And she's doing really good. And I lost my train of thought again. Are you guys following me at all? Because I talk like a roller coaster. And so this is a trip that we're on together. And I think that when what we learn about in recovery about, I was talking about self-centeredness. How could I forget? I don't know, because I'd rather talk about that guy. But being self-centered, you know, I really have a problem when anybody inconveniences me today even. And I have to go through the process. I have to take the deep breath. And sometimes I have to think, what am I going to get out of this? Am I going to get something out of this? And sometimes if the answer is no, I don't do it. And that's just the way it is. And sometimes if the answer is no, I do it anyway. I do it for somebody else, and I get out of that self-centeredness. But I think that learning that there's a world that doesn't revolve around me. I think my father was a narcissist. I don't know. Preachers might be that way. A little bit, anyway, you know, because they like the attention. And, I don't like any attention at all. I'm so shy. And, you know, I really, really, really did not understand when things weren't revolving around me. And then when I started doing all this stuff, and then people were relying on me, then other people started relying on me, so their stuff started going around my stuff. And my stuff hit the ground, and I got into a really bad depression. I had a very bad time, and you know, it taught me that you can't be on a pedestal for one thing, because pedestals only have one thing holding them up, and that's whatever you made it of, you know, and they're wobbly, and there's just one of them, and they fall off. You people fall off of them. So I don't want to put anybody on a pedestal anymore. I used to do that. I had a guy I used to call my guru. And, you know, he used to remind me what my primary purpose was. Like, if I was at work, my primary purpose was to work, not to make phone calls or take naps, because this was stressing me out. And, you know, so, you know, I think that being in recovery and learning how not to be so self-centered is the most spiritual gift that I've ever received in my life. And when I think about other people and connect spirituality with them, that's how I see it in their lives. They help other people. They're not the center of everything. And, I keep thinking about, I can't remember the name of this movie, but there was there used to be like a thing that you could hold and it had a ball in it. You could make the planets go around it, you know. If you drop it, it falls apart, you know, and everybody falls apart. If we put people on pedestals, that's what happens sometimes. And it's not good for them, you know, and it's not good for the people that put them up there. Because everybody's human, like I said, and we all have feelings. And just because somebody is, my guru, Andy, just because he was my guru, he threw his TV out the window one day and he wasn't my guru anymore, you know? And so, you know, it really stressed me out, you know? And if people will follow me around in my daily life, they will understand how many feelings I have, because I try to have my feelings. Try not to stuff them down. And just that self-centeredness, you know, that's such a core feeling of everything. And it causes so much destruction. But it's such an oxymoron, because we have to take care of ourselves. So when I love something, it doesn't mean I put it in a box and not use it. I told you about that new book I got. It's like, I can't wait to write in it, you know, and mark it up and make it look old, you know, because I want to use it. And, that's why I bought it, you know, so I could use the book. And sometimes when we use things, they get worn out, you know, and they're a little tattered. Here I am, you know. And that's just what happens, you know. And I'm a little tattered and I'm clean today, and I really believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I think Narcotics Anonymous is the best place in the world to find anything your heart desires, which is what I think you should have, and which is spirituality. And I think that we can share that with each other and teach each other how to deal with our families, because what we learn about in here, unconditional love, we can give as a group, but we can't necessarily give it to our individual people as individuals, but we can do it together. And that's how we learn, you know, to help each other out. And our own families are included in that. So, anyway, anybody wants to see pictures, come see me after the meeting. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.